Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be discussing something that, well, I don't know what your feelings are about it, but I strongly believe, as Dr. Kate Telenko will discuss with us, that we need to start looking at how we can utilize people in the United States to fill the jobs that are so desperately in need of qualified, talented people, especially when it comes to medical care. And this is something that all of us will have to face at one time or another if we live long enough, by the grace of God. And she has put together a book called Insourced, How Importing Jobs Impacts the Healthcare Crisis Here and Abroad. And her perspective, I think, is going to be an eye-opening one for those of you listening. Dr. Kate Telenko, welcome to the show.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here with you and your audience.
Thank you. Do you mind if I call you Dr. Kate?
Please. That's great.
Wonderful. Now, I want people to know that you're a physician. You've got degrees from Harvard, Cambridge University, the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. You were the former coordinator of the World Bank's Africa Health Workforce Program. You are currently serving as the Director of Clinical Services for a global health nonprofit organization, and you live in Washington, D.C. I was so pleased to get your book because I think your topic about insourcing is so absolutely incredibly right on target, and we really, really need to take a look at healthcare from a perspective that is beyond what we are given on so many levels of media. It's a big, big challenge. How did you decide that this was something you really wanted to dig your teeth into and decide to write this book? Because it's a challenging topic. A lot of people are just not going to even want to listen to it.
Sure. I decided to write it because I felt that it was an issue that affected everyone, but most people weren't even aware of it. It's a jobs issue. It's a quality of healthcare issue. And in fact, it's even an American security issue. And most people aren't aware. You know, it's important for your audience to know that the issue of importation of foreign healthcare workers affects them directly, you know, whether it affects the quality of care they receive or the career opportunities that their children and family members would have. It affects all of us. I mean, the most direct reason why I decided to write the book is, you know, I am still a practicing pediatrician, and so I still work in underserved areas in around a 2 hours drive from Washington, D.C. But I also go to a lot of global meetings where people are talking about the global health worker shortage and how, you know, every day 21,000 children die unnecessarily from easily preventable diseases, vaccine-preventable diseases, pneumonia, diarrhea, and how it's just, it's terrible. There are a billion people alive today who will never see a healthcare worker in their entire lives. And that's just inexcusable, and something had to be done, but no one was talking about what I saw as one of the most important elements of the problem, in that America every year imports tens of thousands of healthcare workers from some of the poorest and sickest countries in the world, and this just devastates their healthcare system. You know, think of the organization where you work. Imagine if every year, you know, 10 or the 20 of the most productive people just left, never to be replaced. Mm-hmm. You know, within a year or two, most organizations would just collapse under that. And that's basically what's happened to the health systems in these countries. And I felt that there needed to be a voice connecting the global health worker shortage and the, you know, the global problems with child death and what America is doing about its health workforce shortage. And so that's the reason, the most direct reason that I wrote the book.
Before we went on air, I mentioned to you that I wanted to bring up a subject matter that there are many health care facilities at this time because we have a growing elderly population. They are importing many health care workers. I would say a goodly portion of them are women. They're coming from areas like the Philippines, maybe Africa, areas of Africa, and they are being actually brought in illegally. They do not have, quote-unquote, the proper working visas, and there are persons that manage to manipulate the system, so they come in and they're working at a lot of healthcare facilities. And one of the points that you bring out in your book, which I thought was very significant, is that it's a major challenge here in the United States because many of these healthcare workers are coming from cultural environments and they don't have a clue about the American environment. And so they bring in a lot of their own filters, biases, language difficulties, and they have a terrible time. And many times these people are, in my view, like indentured servants. They are brought in and they work horribly long hours. And it's a major problem. Why is it we cannot train enough people here to take care of what we need here?
Oh, you've just touched upon so many different issues. I'll try to address each of them. One is the aging of America. As your listeners know, there's 70 million baby boomers in the U.S., and they're now, you know, entering their 60s and 70s. And this is a time of someone's life where they need so much more health care than they've ever used before. In fact, someone over 60 uses six times more health care than someone who's in her 20s or 30s. This is, you know, number of hospital visits, number of hospitalizations, number of prescriptions. And so just with the aging of America, we'll need so many more healthcare workers, even if we're able to get, you know, efficiencies with telemedicine and other, you know, other forms of teamwork, we'll still need a lot more healthcare workers. Also, with the, you know, the passage of the Affordable Care Act, or what some people call Obamacare, we'll add over 32 million people newly on health insurance rolls. Those people are sicker than the rest of America, and they will need and demand a lot more health care. So that also will exaggerate our health worker shortage. In fact, when you look in Massachusetts, where they, you know, previously passed comprehensive reform, they increased the number of people insured by only about 5%. They had, you know, massive shortages of health workers, massive increases in wait times to see a physician. And so they only increased insured rate by 3%, 3 to 5%. Obamacare will increase the rate of people insured by about 10 to 15%. So a much higher rate of increase. And so you can imagine even greater increases in wait times and a further aggravation of the health worker shortage. And so you mentioned the cultural issues. This is very much a concern for me. Most of these health workers, there's no formal testing of their English language skills. When the physicians came in, they used to have to take the TOEFL, which is the test of English language, English as a foreign language. They now no longer have to take the TOEFL. Also, with seniors, there's a special concern with their ability to understand accents. Many seniors haven't been around a lot of foreigners. Also, as people age, they have a lot of problem with hearing. And so just their ability to understand is a concern. But also, it's important to remember that these foreign healthcare workers are coming from cultures in which domestic violence is not a crime or is not prosecuted, you know, in which women do not make decisions over their lives, in which homosexuality is a capital offense, where, you know, women who are not married are, the assumption is that they do not have sex, and so you would see missed, you know, sexually transmitted diseases or missed pregnancies because the foreign-trained healthcare worker is assuming that the unmarried woman with abdominal pain can't possibly be pregnant. And so this is a huge concern that I have. And there are also cultural understandings of wellness and illness and how people make decisions around death and dying that are completely different in other countries. In some countries, if someone is dying, they're not told that. The family members might be told that, but the patient is not told. You also mentioned very significant labor issues, especially with nurses. Nurses are some of the most vulnerable healthcare workers that are imported. It's well documented that often their passports are taken away from them. They're given shifts that are longer than American nurses are given, and you know, fatigue in any type of healthcare worker greatly increases the likelihood that they'll make a medical error and that the patient will be injured or will die as a result. Also, it's well documented that foreign healthcare workers are willing to take on more patients that is considered safe. For example, if you told an American trained nurse that she had to cover 20 patients, she would say no, and she would pick up the phone and, you know, she would call the local, health inspector and let them know what was going on. But if you ask a Filipino nurse, she'll say yes, because in the Philippines, that was a standard load, or 30 patients per nurse might be a standard load. So one, she doesn't necessarily think it's a problem, and two, she's afraid if she protests that she'll be sent out of the country. And so that's very much of a concern. It's also well documented that foreign healthcare workers drive down the wages in general of all healthcare workers because they're willing to work for less. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned also the safety issue, and there's a lot of good evidence that, you know, the less sleep a health worker gets and the more patients that they cover, that the higher the death rates are for the patients that they're responsible for. So it's very much a concern. And then you also, your final question was, why can't we train enough healthcare workers? You know, the U.S. used to be number one in the percent of population with tertiary education with bachelor's degree. We've now, unfortunately, fallen to number two in the world. We're no longer number one on that. But we've basically outpriced ourselves out of training sufficient number of healthcare workers. I'm sure your listeners will know that the cost of tertiary education, the cost of college, has for the past 20 years been increasing faster than inflation. Mm-hmm. And then the cost of health worker education, you know, pharmacists, physicians, nurses, OTs, PTs, has been increasing even faster than general tertiary education. It's getting to the point that, you know, it's almost not worth it at the current price to pursue the careers. But even despite that, hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. want to be healthcare workers. There's a myth that no one wants to be a nurse anymore. You know, that, you know, now that women can be doctors and nurses and Indian chiefs, that they didn't want to be a nurse. But no, nothing could be further from the truth. Every year, American nursing schools turn away hundreds of thousands of qualified applicants. It's simply that there are not enough slots. And so one thing that I'm trying to do is work with schools to find out ways to train workers more cost effectively so that we can expand the number of slots that are available to Americans.
This is a point that I find extremely significant, and you go into quite a bit of detail in your book, Insourced, which I think is excellent. I know here, and I'm in the Seattle, Washington area, we have some very fine nursing schools, and I was talking to someone that was a dean of one of the nursing schools, and I asked her, how has the schooling changed? Well, apparently, now there are all of these specialties. Just like with physicians, there are specialties with nursing, and the nurses have to be more technicians. And I've often thought, since I had this discussion with her, about some of the programs that I've seen about midwives and women that were trained to do basic nursing, being in that compatible positioning. One time it was called LVNs, where they were able to tend to people, be there, comfort them, make sure they were okay. And maybe they didn't want to go into an area of specialty. They really liked more of the one-on-one. And they would travel to different homes and tend to people in their homes. And I thought, how is it that we can shift? Because there's such a need. There is such a need. The cost of health care is exorbitant. The cost of education for a lot of people is exorbitant. Not everybody is going to want to become a radiation specialist or a cardiac nurse or whatever the specialties might be. There's such a huge need for care, and people are willing to work. And you say in your book, $90 billion, that's with a capital B, a year in wages going to people brought into the United States to work rather than training Americans to do the job. Dr. Kate, this is something that I just shake my head over. Why is it we cannot have education so, one, it is going to be more reasonable? We need people that are going to be doing, we've got so much of a need with this aging population. We've got a tremendous need for families. And nurses are, oh my goodness, they have always been invaluable.
No, absolutely. And, you know, just to give a little bit of context to this, so currently 25% of all physicians are foreign-born, foreign-trained, and about 15% of the rest of health jobs are foreign-born, foreign-trained. These are jobs with average salaries of over $60,000 a year. That's close to twice the average salary of an American. So these are some of the best jobs in the U.S., and we're just giving them away. It really is a shame. And, you know, I want to remind your listeners that healthcare is currently 17% of our economy. And during the Great Recession the last 4 years, while all other sectors have lost jobs, the healthcare sector has grown and has expanded and has offered, offered more jobs up. And to kind of, you know, put it into a little bit of context and to ask the question, why haven't states acted? Why haven't communities acted? Why hasn't the government acted to correct this problem? You might remember Toyota had some faulty brakes a couple years ago, and tragically these brakes caused 35 deaths. They had to invest $2 billion, once again with a B, to recall and replace all those brakes. Well, 100,000 people die in the U.S. every year because we don't have enough healthcare workers. But, you know, there's been no call to arms to train more workers. President Bush actually signed a presidential action to protect the American sock industry. Yes, that socks is what you wear on your feet, because there was a risk that the sock industry would go to Honduras. And so you saw a presidential, you know, action to replace, to defend the job sector that had only a couple hundred jobs, whereas we lose, you know, hundreds of thousands of some of our highest paying jobs, and there's been no, you know, presidential level action on this. And it really is embarrassing. And you know, with our competition to China actually has started to open up dozens of new nursing schools with the sole idea of to send these nurses to the U.S.
To
take American nursing jobs because they can train them more cheaply. And they train them using different criteria. For example, one of the big reasons we have a nursing shortage is nursing professors need to have a master's or preferably a Ph.D. to teach. This is two levels of degree higher than the basic nursing degree. Your listeners might not be aware, most RNs, most registered nurses that you meet, do not have a bachelor's. They have a 2 or 3 year associate's degree. Requiring the professors to have master's and PhDs means that they're by that definition, there's a shortage of nursing professors. But in China, they don't have those roles. And so they can train more nurses and send them over here. So we really need to look at what we're doing in the education system that is causing us to not train enough Americans to be health workers. Because every time you see a foreign-born, foreign-trained health worker, that represents an American that didn't get to realize his or her dream of being a health worker. But I did want to say that there are solutions. One of the most powerful solutions and something that every listener on today can do something about is to work with their community college to train more healthcare workers, whether it's x-ray techs or physical assistant therapists or nurses or pharmacy techs. There are shortages in all those fields, and community colleges can very easily and very affordably, address that, but they just need a little more investment from the community. And also there's a lot that you can do by providing scholarships for local students to say that in agreement for paying for their 2 or 3 years of education that they will work for 2 or 3 years in your community. That's very standard, very well accepted. We also need to align federal and state higher education budgets with public health needs. They actually have data on what degrees have the lowest level of unemployment. You know, right now, people who graduate from college, I think there's 50 to 60% unemployment. Well, if you graduate with a health professional degree, you're almost guaranteed to have a job. And so I think that state budgets and federal budgets need to be realigned so that, you know, we don't necessarily have to increase the education budget, but we have to focus it more on healthcare jobs. Same with Job Corps funding. There's several billion dollars a year that goes into Job Corps funding, often into shrinking or shrinking industries or industries that are growing very slowly, like construction or manufacturing. This Job Corps funding needs to be shifted into training more healthcare workers. And there is some movement on it. For example, in South Carolina, Governor Nikki Haley there has said that they are going to start looking. They're going to start a dialogue with state employers, find out what type of employees they need, look at what the colleges in South Carolina are training, and do a realignment. And I think that makes perfect sense. If the state is going to subsidize state education, they should make sure it's aligned with the state needs. And I think you'll see a greater investment in health worker education in South Carolina because of that.
Well, and there's so many levels that, and like you said, many of those that would be nurses, they would have an associate's degree, and the community colleges can really have a significant impact because there are so many individuals. My goodness, you can just look at any neighborhood and find a family. I was just talking to a family last week who had moved into the area, and they said their aging father was a couple of blocks away. And this is a family that's very cohesive, but they're also working. So they're going to need to have someone maybe check on their dad every once in a while. I can't
Absolutely.
Tell you how many families that I've talked with. They said, gee, if somebody could come in and just, you know, give my mom some relief where she could have a day off with her friends and take a break.
Yes.
You know, and things like this. And there's hospice care. And hospice has done nicely. There's a lot that has increased just in the Pacific Northwest. But we have so much other basic stuff. Just simple,
right.
basic stuff that would good. Now, you make some comments, and I want to quote directly from your book. Many foreign-trained healthcare workers, no matter how smart, are not adequately prepared for practice in the fast-paced, high-tech world of U.S. medicine. Boy, is that the truth. Also, that you had information on polls, 70 to 80% of Americans want to reduce the rate of immigration into the U.S., but the average American is not aware of the U.S. policy of using healthcare worker-specific visas, healthcare worker-specific visas to solve the healthcare worker shortage. Now, that is something we don't hear in the media. Nobody really is going to be aware of it through your book, InSource. Yes, then we become aware of it. And I think your message is so very, very important, and your information about the healthcare industry and how many people are needed and someone can have a good-paying job. But you made a comment earlier that really, really makes me ask a question here. Why is it that physicians or healthcare workers coming in from outside the United States are not tested on English? If they cannot speak English well, if they cannot do that well, they're not going to be able to read it well. And consequently, if there were medications or instructions given to these healthcare workers, I wouldn't care if they had a photographic memory. They are not going to be able to treat the patients as they should be treated. And I'm aware of families with malpractice suits that are going on right now because of that very thing. Why is it that standard was removed? And how can we make those standards be brought back in?
Yeah, no, it is terrible. You know, one of the many people I interviewed for my book was a mortician. that worked with a lot of families in an area where many of the ICU doctors were foreign born, foreign trained, and the families. Would quite often express frustration that they felt the doctor wasn't communicating with them, or when he or she did, they couldn't understand, or they felt many of these physicians were from communities in which women were not seen as equal to men, and they felt mm-hmm. that the women in the family weren't being given the same information the men were, or the decision-making of the women in the family wasn't being honored. As to why that decision was made, I don't know. I don't know why. I think it was a mistake. They are given tests in English, in written English, but that is different from a test that specifically looks at your English language skills. Because when you talk to someone about death and dying, when you talk to someone about, depression, anxiety, you need to be completely fluent. You cannot mm-hmm. have a halting English. You cannot have a strong accent, in my opinion, to adequately be able to discuss these life and death issues with families. And so I think it has been a mistake that foreign trained workers no longer have to take the TOEFL, the test of English as a foreign language. And I think that adding that test would do a great deal to improve the quality of the care that Americans receive from foreign trained workers. As to your question of them not being adequately trained, this happens at many different levels. As I said, the standards for health worker education very different in other countries than American countries. And actually, many of the countries in which I work, the schools aren't even accredited by the government. You just open up a school, and so no one's checking the quality. And also, the diseases and conditions that affect people in other countries are completely different from the diseases and conditions that affect Americans. When I, as a pediatrician, go to hospitals in Latin America and Asia, I see children who are being hospitalized for tuberculosis, for simple diarrhea, for malaria, for HIV/AIDS. You rarely have those conditions in the U.S. And also the technology I see as far as the drugs or the medical devices they have are completely different. I remember being in an ICU in a Caribbean country, and those are middle-income countries. They're not that poor. The ICU looked to me like a dirty, regular floor of an American hospital, not an intensive care unit. That's it. The type of equipment that they had in their intensive care unit, which is the most, sophisticated care that you can give, was equivalent to a regular hospital floor. And so that just shows, how different the quality of care is. And with the immigration, as you know, Donna, I end my book with the quote from the base of the Statue of Liberty, which says that, America's immigration policies have been, based on having people come and accepting, not everyone who wanted to come, but not looking necessarily at your education. But with the earmarked visas, there are visas particularly earmarked for healthcare workers. And I find that problematic in that it does calls us not to have to invest in educating more healthcare workers, and it gives them an unfair advantage. In that, when you talk to someone who has a lot of education but is unemployed, they're often very angered to find out that that the people with higher educations are allowed sort of first in line with the visas. And I think it's an unfair process, and it does a lot of damage to the U.S.
Yes, I would agree. And again, my question would be, and perhaps you cannot answer it, what would it take to put that into positioning where the standard of excellence regarding English and communication skills would be demanded?
Well, I think that, your listeners would need to reach out to their state representatives and their national representatives and let them know that this is an issue that's of concern to them, their families, and communities, and that they want the U.S. to invest more in America and train more Americans to be health workers and to enable countries to keep their healthcare workers. For example, I would love if we stop recruiting healthcare workers from the 30 worst affected countries. The World Health Organization has a list of the 57 countries that don't even have enough healthcare workers to do child vaccination and to have all deliveries of children be attended by a qualified health professional. So I think that we should stop recruiting from the worst affected of those countries, and maybe with a goal in 20 years to stop recruiting from all of those 57 countries. Right now, frankly, we couldn't do it because we're too reliant on them. For example, our largest source of physicians is number one, India, number two, Pakistan. And those are both health workforce crisis countries. They can't even vaccinate all the children because of the shortage of healthcare workers. I would love if we stopped recruiting from India and Pakistan tomorrow, but we can't because we're too reliant on them. But I think, you know, your listeners need to reach out to their state representatives to ask them to align educational budgets with jobs in the state, and to, you know, to demand, you know, higher quality of the healthcare workers who are allowed to come into the U.S. and that you know, you and your families want to be protected from, you know, from people who might be practicing substandard medicine.
Absolutely. Your book, InSource, is just absolutely incredible, and the subtitle is How Importing Jobs Impacts the Healthcare Crisis Here and Abroad. This isn't one-sided. She has presented information, Dr. Kate Tulenko, has presented information that gives various facets of insight, not just for the U.S., but also for other countries as well. So it is a, if you will, an overview of an evolution that is affecting on a negative level so many people's lives. And we need to be awakened to the fact that we can make a difference here, and we need to talk to some people about it and look at changing the educational system so that we are supportive, so that we can educate those in the U.S. that want to have a job and do it in a way where it's going to be affordable. And there are so many positions available, whether it's pharmacists, healthcare workers of different types, nurses, doctors. I mean, it's just incredible. Dr. Kate Tulenko, what is your website?
It is, sure. It's wordpress.com/ktulenko.
WordPress.
Yes, WROD Press, PRESS. .com/, and then it's my first initial last name, KTULENKO.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being my guest today. I'm delighted you were able to take time out of your busy schedule. For those of you listening, this book is well worth getting and reading. It is very important. Go to her website, wordpress.com/K for Kate Tulenko, T-U-L-E-N-K-O. I think you will be very, very much interested in what she has to share. Dr. Kate Tulenko, again, thank you very much for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Phone lines are open, and if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be more than happy to do that. Well, my goodness, Thanksgiving just seems to be right around the corner, and I'm going to have some recipes to share with you and some other things as well. So you might want to have a pad of paper and pen handy. I wanted to discuss for just a minute a quote by Calvin Coolidge. It says, "Our real problem is not our strength today. It's rather the vital necessity of action today to ensure our strength tomorrow." And it reminds me, that quote reminds me of the old fable, Aesop's fable, about the ant and the grasshopper. And of course, this was written hundreds and hundreds of years ago. But it's come down through the centuries because it's a very valid one. And the story of the grasshopper is that he was a fiddler and, oh, he just had a wonderful time. People loved him. But the ants were very industrious, and the ants would not take time to play. So the grasshopper would entertain everybody and anybody. But the ants knew that they had to prepare for winter. And so they would be out busy gathering whatever they needed for their storehouses of food because they wanted to make sure that they were covered during the long winter months. And of course, the time came, and according to Aesop's fable, the grasshopper wanted to have what the ants had prepared. And the ants said, "But you've done no work. You haven't done anything. You've been playing away your summer." And he said, "Oh, that's just what I do." Well, in Aesop's story, the grasshopper ended up dying because he had not made any preparations whatsoever. And the ants went on, and they were able to continue through the winter, and everyone was taken care of. Now, that's a very, very old fable. And some people listening to it today might say, "Oh, that's terribly cruel. They should have taken care of the grasshopper." However, when you really become aware of life and its patternings, you note whether it's this country or some other country, when people are working industriously to be prepared, taking care of what needs to be taken care of. You can have time for play, that's fine. But you cannot be fiddling your time away and expecting the rest of the world to take care of you. It just doesn't work that way. It's not going to hold water. And time again, whenever a society, a business, or individual go that route, they often find themselves left high and dry. And then they wonder why. Well, they weren't willing to invest in themselves. And our guest today, Dr. Kate, that is one of the points that I felt that she was trying to get across. And in her book, Insourced, it's a very valuable one. We need to constantly invest in ourselves. And with the younger generation needs to realize that you're not going to have everything guaranteed to you. There is the need to constantly learn and to grow. And this is so important. So those of us that are older need to remember to be supportive of young people, encourage them to go for education, keep ourselves alert and aware, realizing that their world is probably going to be quite a different world from the one that we're living in. But it's important to support them and encourage them to keep doing the things that need to be done so that there is an onward progression and not a stagnation. It really does make a difference. And we have to remember, as individuals, that we've got to invest in ourselves. I was talking with someone not too long ago about how the member of their family who's in their 80s is still working. And they said, "We cannot imagine not working. We can't afford not to, first of all. But secondly, the person who was in their 80s is saying they enjoyed it because they were working in an environment. Part of the work was volunteer, but another part of the work they were actually getting paid for. And they were quite sophisticated relative to keeping up with computers and all kinds of things that
a lot of people just think, well, it's not necessary. But they say, no, I want to keep up with what's going on with my grandkids and my great-grandkids so I can have a conversation with them, share with them the best of what I feel my generation has contributed, but also encourage them to stay up to date with what they need to learn and give them tools to survive the experience of life. And I think the generation gap can be really shortened when we are able to do that. So it's important for us to be aware of what's happening in the world to a degree and realize that as individuals, we can start right in our own communities to make a difference. But we do have to speak up and speak out. It is so very, very important, and all you have to do is begin with one step, either supporting a group or a cause that you believe in, but you start somewhere. Just start somewhere. I've got a wonderful recipe here for a spice layer cake. If you're someone that, when the holidays come, if you're like me, you just love to bake and you like to put stuff out on the table that people aren't going to be getting typically in a restaurant, you want to fix something that is a little different. Well, this spice layer cake, it's made with fresh fruit, pecans, and even maple candy. So it is going to be something when people have it, they're going to just go, wow. So I'll be sharing that with you in just a little bit. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. This week, we have got a dynamic lineup of individuals. We're going to be talking with Bob tomorrow. Bob is the man that put together the company Red Mill out of Oregon. People Before Profits is a book about his life. We're going to be talking with the man directly tomorrow. He has a company that, well, what he ended up doing with his company was absolutely amazing. He is in his 80s. He goes to work every day. He's an incredible guy, so we're going to be talking with him tomorrow. And then, well, on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about what drug companies won't tell you, what doctors can't tell you. A physician, Dr. Michael Madre, is going to be with us. And we are going to be finding out some very, very interesting points of information. So if this is of interest to you, be sure to tell your friends, because I think they'll really enjoy hearing. Well, maybe enjoy is a strong word. I think it will be enlightening to find out what Dr. Murray has to share. Also, on Thursday, we're going to be talking with Lisa Bennett, Eco-Literate. This is going to be a discussion on how teachers and children are actively becoming involved in understanding what they can do to make a difference about the environment that they live in. And Lisa's going to be sharing that information with us. And then Michael Drew, we're going to be discussing the pendulum. This is about how past generations affect the present and even our future. Michael Drew is my guest, and we'll also be having on Friday Carolyn Floor. We'll be talking to her about Heaven's Child, and this is a very personal story about her experience with her own child and how she weathered the changes that this child brought into her life. So we've got a wonderful, wonderful, dynamic group of people this week. I hope you'll tell your friends and share the time with them so that, well, maybe we can make this world a little bit richer, a place for us to live in. Okay, this is a poem. Thanksgiving is coming up, and this delightful poem was written by Robin Christine Ireland. She says, as I count my blessings of family, friends, and food, I look around my table in a joyful mood. My heart is bursting in a big way on this happy Thanksgiving day. Lovely, lovely thoughts. Well, we've got a recipe here for a spice layer cake. And for those of you that are wanting to send me information, if you're having a problem with getting through on the email, try and email donnasebo@comcast.net. There's, again, some challenges I'm having with my server. So if you'll just use donnasebo@comcast.net, you'll be able to email me information. I've been getting recipes and fun stories, and of course I just am so delighted when you send me those details because it enables me to pass it along, either in my newsletter or in some other form, perhaps even sharing the stories and, you know, suggestions that you might have on the air. So if you have something you'd like to get to me, send it to Donna Sebo at Comcast.net. The spice layer cake, well, when we come back, I'll have a little bit of that, and then I'll have a special story to share with you as well. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to chat, 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, spice layer cake. As I said, I'm a baker, and so I just absolutely love to try out new things. And this recipe is really quite easy, and the flavor is awesome. And there's a rich cream cheese frosting. This is the type of thing that when you fix it and you can take it, let's say, to a potluck, or if on Thanksgiving you're going to someone's home and you really want to have something different that nobody else is going to prepare, this is the kind of item that you want to take along. It's so much fun. Okay, this is the cake portion. You're going to need 2.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 2.5 cups of all-purpose flour, 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder, 1.5 teaspoons of baking powder, 3/4 teaspoon of baking soda, 3/4 teaspoon of baking soda, 1 teaspoon each of ground ginger and ground allspice, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1 cup of granulated sugar, 3/4 cup of packed dark brown sugar, 3/4 cup of oil, 3 eggs, and 1 cup of cinnamon applesauce. Now, if you just have regular applesauce, just add cinnamon to it. No biggie. All right, and this is what you're going to need for the frosting. You're going to need 1 cup of butter. That needs to be at room temperature. 1 package, an 8-ounce package of cream cheese. That also needs to be at room temperature. 4.5 cups of confectionery sugar. 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract. 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger. And then for decorating, you can get champagne grapes, pecan halves, figs, kumquats, lemon leaves, and Vermont leaf-shaped maple sugar candies. This is adornment if you wanted to put this on. This is all, that's all optional. So again, 1 cup of butter, 1 package, 8-ounce cream cheese, 4.5 cups of confectionery sugar, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger. That's for the frosting. The cake. What you do, you need 2 8-ounce round cake pans. You spray that with cooking spray, and then maybe put a little bit of flour in it. I like to put a piece of wax paper in the bottom of the pan. I learned that years ago when I was doing cake decorating, and I would have to bake my cakes in pans, and having that circular piece of wax paper on the bottom of the pan was just perfect. You peel it off, you had this wonderful flat surface. I really liked it. So what you're going to do is take your flour, baking soda, A baking powder, soda, ginger, allspice, and salt. Mix that. Takes you about 2 seconds just to whisk that together. And then on medium speed, you want to take your granulated sugar, your brown sugar, and oil, and you want to beat it until it's nice and light. That's going to take about 2 minutes. So just put it in your mixer and let the mixer do the work. Then you want to add your eggs and your applesauce, and you just let the mixer beat it until the batter is really, really smooth. Then after it's really smooth, you add on low speed your flour mixture until it's nicely combined. And then, of course, you just divide the batter between the two pans. You bake it 38 to 40 minutes. You want to be sure you test it with a toothpick to make sure the centers have baked through. And when that toothpick comes out clean, naturally the cake is done. Now you let the cake cool on a rack for about 10 minutes. Then you take the cake out of the pan, putting it on the rack to cool completely. Now when you're ready to frost the cake, on medium speed, you're going to beat your butter and your cream cheese until it's nice and fluffy. Again, the machine does all the work for you. Can you imagine in colonial days you had to do this stuff, all of this stuff by hand? Ugh, they must have had the muscles of Arnold Schwarzenegger by the time they finished in the kitchen. But with the machine, it's only 2 to 3 minutes. And then on low, you gradually beat in your confectionery sugar, and then your vanilla and your ginger until it's all combined. And then you turn up the speed to medium-high, beating until everything is nice and fluffy. And that's going to take you about 2 minutes, maybe longer. Then you have your cake on your cake plate. And if you're like me, you take little pieces of wax paper, putting it underneath that bottom layer. So after everything's frosted, then you can just gently pull those pieces away, and your cake plate is just nice and tidy. Anyway, you put your frosting, a cup of frosting, on the top of your bottom layer. Put your top layer on, garnish it with, or, you know, not garnish, but spread the rest of the frosting on the cake, and then you garnish it with the fruits, the pecans, maybe some maple candies, and those lemon leaves. You can just have an absolutely beautifully decorated cake. Use your imagination, anything that you would like to put on there. I would recommend putting this cake in the refrigerator. If you have space in your refrigerator, you could actually make the cake without garnishing it with the items that were mentioned. You could just put that covered in your refrigerator, and the flavors in the spice cake and in the frosting will marry. And, oh, it is going to be so, so good. I have a cake that a friend sent me a recipe for. It was a marmalade cake, and she did that, and by golly, oh, it was just awesome. A Beagle, Saving the Life of a Woman by the Name of Teresa. Well, you know what? This little beagle came into Teresa's life because she had rescued this dog. That's right. She found this little puppy, and she said, oh, my goodness, he's such a talker. He's just wonderful. He needed to be rescued, and she took him in. This little dog ended up with skin cancer, just a baby. And she said, okay, so took care of giving him the treatment that he needed, and by golly, the little guy came around. Well, this little puppy grew into a mature dog, and it seemed like the circle of life circled for Teresa, because one day she got a call and she was told that she had breast cancer. Well, she had a particular type that was very virulent, and she said, you know what, my little guy had a type of cancer, and he survived it, and the dog's name is Seamus. She said, I am going to just know that I can survive this too. And by golly, she said, it was amazing. She ended up going through the same chemo protocol that her puppy had gone through with his skin cancer. By golly, everything was the same. But that little person was with her, and she started a blog that it's called thedoglived.blogspot.com, where she shared her day-by-day experience, shared the experience of what her dog went through and what she went through. And she said, you know what? When I think about it, I realized I was prepared to face this challenge because I had adopted a little puppy who had a cancerous condition. He's 30 pounds now, but she said, Seamus has always been my beacon of hope, and this dog has taught me that life is meant to be lived in the here and now, and because of him, I have learned that anything is possible. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me. It's been a delight, and I look forward to having you join me tomorrow. God bless. Have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are in this world of ours. Talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.